I think asking for help is a skill set that people don't realize that you have to develop.
Welcome to the Jackie Ray Show.
Welcome back to the Jackie Ray Show. I'm, of course, your host, Jackie Ray. Make sure you follow me on all things social media at Jackie Ray TV, especially on Instagram, because if you are listening to this on Monday, today is the WNBA draft. I am going to a draft party, so you're going to want to make sure you follow me and prepare for season 2 of the Hardwood 94, which is coming up very soon. So stay tuned for that. But right now, I want to get into our final part in this series of how we can really impact our young people and thereby impact our future. My guest today is Ishmael Pruitt. He is the co-founder and CEO of Project Optimism. I really love that title. And he kind of has tapped into the obvious, and that is how vital education is to the future of young people. We say that all the time, but we also talk about the preschool to prison pipeline. However, I think we all acknowledge that is real. I don't know if we truly understand how to combat that and address that so our kids don't fall victim to that, which I know is very difficult, especially in families where even if you have two parents, you have two parents that are sometimes working two jobs just to make ends meet and put food on the table. And that makes it difficult to meet every single emotional or educational need of your child. So everyone needs help. I am a big fan of the saying that we need a village. So I'm happy to introduce you to part of your village today, especially if you live in Long Beach and you have a child that attends Long Beach Unified School District and you need some assistance. Project Optimism is going to help you with that. So I'm excited to share that with you. But I do want to remind you that all of your favorite reporters from the Long Beach Post, we are still here. We are still in the fight. The three people who were not laid off are still on strike and standing in solidarity with the rest of us who were laid off. And we are still trying to get back the paper that needs to be run with integrity and needs to be here for the community. However, if we are not successful, we will still succeed in having reporters and a newspaper and an online presence that is definitely here for the community. So I want you to take a moment, go on to social media, follow us on all things social media at LBM Guild, which is Long Beach Media Guild, and then follow our watchdog account so you can get all the news that you've come accustomed to from the Long Beach Post, from the reporters that you've come to know and love. If you've also been following and you've missed at all the word on Long Beach with Jackie Ray, which is me, that was brought to you by the Long Beach Post. You can definitely follow this podcast. This podcast is definitely very similar to that. I will cover big topics that affect us nationally, but my passion is the community that I live in and I love, and that is the community in Long Beach. So make sure you reach out to me. Make sure you stay tapped in with me. Again, you're going to want to tap in if you have young children, even if they're not struggling, but you know how tapped you might be and you know that you are working, doing everything you can. It's never going to hurt to have someone in the wings that's ready to help where your child might be struggling, especially in their schoolwork. So I'm excited to introduce to you Ishmael Pruitt of Project Optimism. All right, you guys, please welcome Ishmael Pruitt to the Jackie Ray Show. He has a very interesting story that he's going to explain to us today. He's going to talk about his struggles in college and his years as a professional in higher education and how that led him to believe that the solution to social change comes through education and empowerment of students. And I cannot leave out that he is a proud alumni of Sacramento State and Long Beach State, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Project Optimism, which we're going to learn more about as well today. So, Ishmael, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. Now, this is part two, basically. I wanted to really dive into what we need to do to really empower our young people to make sure we can kind of change the trajectory of things, especially when it comes to the Black community. So your background seemed very intriguing to me in that regard, but let's go back a little bit. Let's talk about these struggles. Sure. So tell me some of your struggles specifically, like in college and your years as a professional in higher education.
It started off when I actually was enrolled at Sacramento State in 2010. And I had this idea that I was going to be this person that was going to change the criminal justice system, and we was going to make sure all men of color are not going to the system. And that idea enough was not enough to push through the institution that I actually had to navigate, which is higher education. Right. So when I enrolled, I had these big ideas and ambitions, but I later learned that my high school didn't really prepare me for the freedom, the accountability that I needed to be successful as a college student at the university level. And so I started off with remediation courses. I took remediation math and remediation English. So I'm already kind of feel like I'm starting off in the red compared to some of my other peers. So that kind of was like the first jab at my confidence. And then they're telling you, if you don't pass these classes the first time, you're going to be academically disqualified. And so within my first semester, I'm thinking, all right, you go to class, you study, you're going to get good grades because that's what happened in high school. But my first semester, I was put on academic probation. So now they're telling me, hey, Ishmael, you got one more chance. And if you mess up, you're gone. It wasn't so much about what's going on in your educational experience. And let's make sure we support you to this goal of changing the justice system and the reason why I came to the institution in the first place. Like, I wasn't going to college just because I wanted to learn. I was trying to get some money and get a good career at the end of the day. And so I felt like there was a disconnect, and maybe I was a little bit entitled and naive at the time, but that was just my expectation of understanding. And so then next thing you know, the next year comes and I didn't pass my my English class, which is a remediation course. So now I'm getting this letter saying, with regret, we must inform you that you're going to be academically disqualified. Here's an appeals process. And I'm like, bruh, first year, you know what I'm saying? I had already learned about the school to prison pipeline, which had a lot of Black males a part of that experience. And I learned about college dropout rates. And guess what? Black males are making up a large majority of that. So I'm like, dang, I am the system. And fortunately, I'm not going to be incarcerated, but I'm not really propelling and excelling, which I thought I was going to do. My family, my community had expected for me to achieve and to be. And so I was really just thrown for a loop. Like, what the heck? Like, what is my trajectory look like? Do I go to the military? Do I go to Job Corps? And then I was like, nah, I'm not about that life. I need to figure out this education thing. And so fortunately, my ability to make connections in my first year, there were people who started to reach out to me and say, hey, Ishmael, like, what's your plan? What are you going to do different if I help you get reinstated into the university? And that's when the idea of mentorship really kicked in, and allowing people to hold me accountable and to a standard, and really having a community and a village so that my idea of social change and social justice could come to life. And so from those struggles in my first year of higher education, opened my eyes to understand that I can't do this alone and I need to allow myself to be supported. But how I was raised is you figure stuff out. So there was a disconnect where either there's not resources or you're told you got to figure it out, because we all got stuff to do. We all got to figure things out ourselves. And so I took that mentality to college, and it's a brand new institution, a brand new experience. My father did go to college, but it was later in his life. So his experience in higher education was completely different from mine. And so I didn't really have too much to lean on to. But those Black women that I was able to connect with institution, they was like aunties and big sis type situations. They're like, nah, we're going to make sure you really understand how to navigate higher education, because it's not just about going to class. It's about a professional and personal development experience. And if you grow with the institution, then you will create those goals. But if you're here just taking classes, you might get a degree or you might not.
When I hear people say, you know, oh, in high school, this happened or this happened, that's usually where the fall off happens. When we talk about the preschool to prison pipeline, mm-hmm. I feel like usually people, when you're talking about middle school, and most certainly right when you get into high school, and now you have these older kids that you're interacting with, especially if they're on the wrong path, that's where I really feel like I've been used to hearing that's where things get derailed. But for you, you're saying it could have possibly happened in college. I think that's an unusual mindset, at least for me, it's an unusual thing to hear. I think we need to talk about that more, that maybe it's not just the high school, the middle school. It can happen in college as well. Did you see anyone in college that was having the same struggle and maybe didn't have the support system that you did?
Everybody. Wow. So, and I won't say everybody, but a large majority of my peers did not make it past the first year of the people I was connected with, and they trickled to drop out throughout the next year, the year after that. So at Sacramento State, they had this real cool experience called like a Pan-African cohort. And it was a group of, I don't know the number, let's say 60 to 90 Black students. And you're going to take these remediation courses together and continue on this trajectory to success. So it sounds good. You have Black people in your class. A lot of them did not make it past that. When I got academically disqualified, they got academically disqualified, and they maybe went to community college, moved back to the Bay Area, wherever they were at, and maybe didn't talk to them from there. And through time, again, people started to kind of fall off for one reason or another. And I used to ask myself, what did I do different? What was different about my experience? And it was the mentorship. I allowed myself to be coached and understood the value of it. But the other piece was, I had the opportunity to be civically engaged as a college student. And so it lit a fire under me, because my lofty goal for life after college was right in front of me. I was able to be a mentor at a school called Hiram Johnson High School. At the time, it was probably one of the lowest performing high schools in Sacramento County. So I'm going to the school and the kids are connecting to me, asking me questions. They defer to me instead of their teacher. They want me to come at lunchtime. And I am this, well, I guess, second year student who's barely even making it. But the value that I had to offer them and the mindset that I was equipping them with, I also had to hold myself to that same standard. And so, okay, if I want to continue this journey of empowering these young people, I got to stay in college, because that's the ticket that is giving me their buy-in and their trust. Black male, how I present, but also in college, I am their future. I'm their, where they aspire to be. And so like I can't not make it to college, because what do I look like going back and say, hey, I got kicked out and I couldn't make it. They're gonna be like, well, shoot, if Ishmael couldn't do it, then I don't know. I shouldn't try, right? And so I believe that some of my peers, obviously my peer group evolved with time, but my initial group of individuals, they weren't civically engaged. They were simply going to school and going to class and expecting to get the results thereafter, and not really investing into their personal growth and personal development.
When you said, you know, you were raised just figure it out, I'm still in that just figure it out mode. You know, with what we're going through at the Long Beach Post, it's still been one of those most amazing things that's ever happened to me, even though it's tragic at the same time, because I have a group of people that I'm fighting with, and I'm so used to just fighting the fight by myself. Yeah. And do you think that that's something, I know we hear the phrase a lot, generational curse. Do you think as Black people, we are just so focused on, you know what, I got to do this on my own, I got to figure it out. Does that come into play at all when we kind of fall short in areas we want to succeed?
I think some of, yes, it is to our deficit, but also is a level of resilience building that is equipping us with without the intentionality. And I feel like that is probably the disconnect that some of our community members are facing, is they don't know that having to figure it out by yourself is really your resilience. And if you could think about it as resilience, then you could think about your capacity to make it to and through whatever life throws at you. And so my business partner always brings this up. He might have got this quote from somebody else, but he always talks about, we have made it through the hardest things in our life. Like we're 100 of 100, like we've made it through all of them. So we're going to make it through this same thing, but sometimes we don't think of it in that same way. Now on the back end of it, I think we don't understand there's a standard that we have to identify, like the goal we want. And when we're falling short of doing it by ourselves, we need to be responsible to figure out what we need to implement to get there. And I don't think our mind allows us to shift to saying, hey, Ishmael can't figure this out by himself. Ishmael needs to go call on somebody, seek resources, ask for help. And I think asking for help is a skill set that people don't realize that you have to develop. It's not just something you do, but it's like a mental shift and a skill. How do I ask for help? How do I build the trust around people? How do I trust the resource that they're going to do right by me? And because someone cannot vet in other individuals to be trustworthy people to pour into them, they kind of leave it up to figure it out by themselves.
I mean, that's a hard thing to put your trust in somebody else. I know, you know, as I'm going and I'm covering things and I'm telling people, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So if you really want government to invest in your community, especially locally, you have to be loud. You have to raise awareness. The majority of the feedback I get back on that is, yeah, no one's going to help us. No one's going to help us. We have to do that ourselves. So I know that we're talking about, you know, individuals talking, well, communities talking about government. So is that a thing? Do we have to say maybe government's not going to do it? Maybe we do have to do it ourselves, or do we have to find a happy balance between doing it ourselves and seeking assistance?
Well, I think when in context of government, the way I understand nonprofits is a nonprofit's responsibility is to fill the gaps where the government is not addressing. Correct. Okay. So the only reason why Project Optimism was established is because the standards for education and the program and the funding sources are leaving Black students not going to college, going to prison, or just not prepared for workforce development or life, the mental health and the social emotional skills. They're starting to prioritize it. And there's a shift that's happening. But if the government did those things, I wouldn't need to have created Project Optimism. To answer your question, we have a responsibility to create what we need for ourselves. Right. And I felt like that was my responsibility. My social responsibility was I have the confidence to be outspoken, to go figure stuff out, to go ask for help. So how can I do it in the vein of bringing it back to my people, to my community, whatever community or city I live in, those youth will be taken care of the best of my abilities. I'm not going to be like, well, I don't got any kids in the school district, so now I'm good. I don't think that's not how I was raised, but that's certainly not aligned with my foundation of who I am as a person. I can't have this willful blindness and say like, that's not my problem.
It sounds like you've always been on this trajectory to be the CEO and founder of Project Optimism. But what was that moment when you said, I have to start this now? This has to come to fruition now.
I think it was the doors closing because I didn't truly accept that it could be. So in college, I become this mentor. I'm good at being mentor to other youth. And then I'm getting college students like, hey, you got to come volunteer with these kids and be connected to them. And they're seeing the value through that same interaction. So in my mind, I'm like, I'm onto something. College students working with young adults, they're close in age, or young people, they're close in age. There's that representation that's addressed that schools cannot find or hire and retain Black teachers and staff. And so I saw the value there, but I was still stuck on criminal justice because that was my major. And I was like, I don't know what it means to be an entrepreneur. I don't know what it means to even run a nonprofit. I didn't know that nonprofits made money. So in my mind, I was just like, when you think about nonprofits make money, you think about churches, and then you think about scandals with pastors. And I was like, nah, can't be me. Right. But every year, it took me about 5 years to graduate. Every year, I had less and less of a desire or that fire for law enforcement. But I told myself, I'm going to at least try it and see how that can be a safety net to propel me for where I'm going. So fast forward, I graduate, and I've done any and everything you could think you're supposed to do as a college student, from jobs, volunteerism, leadership, literally everything, student athlete. And so I'm thinking like, there's no way somebody's not going to want to hire me. And so I apply for law enforcement. I go through the processes. I get to the interview and the guy says, you know, we're going to offer you a job, but we got to do your background check. Do the background check. It gets denied. And a lot of people don't know, but in law enforcement, they don't have to tell you why you get denied on your background check. You go through this 60-page document that takes you weeks to complete, and then you get your results. And so then I'm like, all right, let me go again. One door closes, another one opens. And I kept going through this process up across California, and people weren't hiring me. And I'm like, I ain't never been arrested anymore before. I've talked to law enforcement, you know, they've shut down a party or something like that, but my name is not in the system anywhere. And that's when I was like, God don't want me to do this. It wasn't meant for me to have this job. What were you good at that you did when you were at your lowest point? That was being a mentor. When I was about to get kicked out of the school, when I wasn't sure, being a mentor gave me the confidence, the life, the spark that I needed. And so at that time, I had worked at the children's receiving home, working with foster youth who were temporarily displaced from their families. And I also connected with this guy named Armani Easley, and he was working there. And so I had a little ego. Like, I'm that guy when it comes to the kids. I got their routine down. They look forward to my shift. And then he comes into the program, and they're just excited to see him as they are to see me. So I'm kind of like, who is this, you know, other dude kind of messing with my group of kiddos? But we became peers and connected through that. And he was in the process of creating his own nonprofit. I was an idea of creating my own. And we just sat down. And was like, bro, we're doing the same exact thing. We're not really friends yet, but I trust your discernment and what God has placed on your heart. And you trust me. And was like, okay, let's see what collaboration could look like. And it was too much alignment where it was like, we kind of have to do co-CEO if we're going to do this together. Mm-hmm. And we just like, let's just do it. Let's just jump off the porch and figure it out. And so it came from begging people to just give me five kids. Let me just show you that we know what we're doing. We don't want any money. We threw a party and raised like $5,000 to fund the program ourselves, to just figure out how to give stipends and scholarships, because we wanted people to believe in what we had, but we needed to create the product ourselves. Mm-hmm. And from there, it just continued to soar.
Okay, so I got a couple more questions. Do you think it was God closing those doors or a little bit of systemic racism?
I'm gonna say God. I do believe systemic racism definitely does and did play a role. I'm sure it did, actually. I'm sure, because I really don't have an answer to this day. I've done background checks on myself and everything comes squeaky clean. So I'm like, I don't know what it was. In my mind, I want to give the benefit of doubt that you have this on paper, this qualified young black male, eager. Why wouldn't you want him to be a part of the system to really rehabilitate and create change? And so I'm going to rest on that. I want to believe that it was something more than that. And I'm already going to blame or shame or go down that rabbit hole of where it's at. God has blessed me to do some crazy things that if I was to work in that system, the impact, the creativity, the innovativeness, I would have not been able to implement in those systems because I have peers who are probation officers and counselors in juvenile halls. And they like, it's safe. It's cool. You know, retirement check. But the stuff, Ishmael, you're able to do to create when you want to do and decisions you're able to make is priceless. You know, the lives I've been able to change, developing young adults to work within my organization, develop families, develop children. I think this is what I was supposed to be doing and how it's working out right now, because it feels too natural, Mm-hmm. I'm stressed with work because there's just so many opportunities, not because I can't figure stuff out. It's like,
right.
Why am I getting all of these grants? How do I make it all make sense?
Let's talk about Project Optimism. So what are the age ranges? Is it every kid, like from young to high school, or does it even go into college?
Yeah, so right now we are focusing on as young as fourth grade. Okay. We're focused on middle school at one point, and we're playing with high school. We went from fourth grade because what they're getting exposed to and just what the data talks about their development is very important, that they have a level of accountability support system that the schools may not be able to have to set them up for success in middle school and then to high school. So our primary target is between fourth grade to eighth grade. We are willing and capable to go into high school if the partnership opportunity isn't aligned, but we're also focusing on now developing a partnership with the universities and colleges where they're either interning or working with our kids directly, but we're preparing them and training them just like we're developing and training our elementary and middle school youth. So when they're going through our program and they're learning about leadership and social responsibility and wellness, we're now going to be developing and training our college students to be prepared for themselves, not just our young people, because they need the support because they didn't have a Project Optimism when they're middle school. So we're trying to address, we are addressing the mentor and the mentee at the same time through our organization.
So tell me about like maybe a young person that came in and was rebellious, maybe didn't listen to authority at all, maybe even having some trouble at home and their parents were just kind of frustrated. I've seen that a lot where parents try really hard, but they still have to work 12 hours a day just to put food on the table. So it's a little bit difficult. And what, how you go into that situation knowing this child is going to be resistant, and how you feel when you see everything turn around.
Yeah. One of the things I put emphasis on, or we put emphasis on, is we have to see the student as a child first and not just a student. So if you take off the student cap, you're not looking at grades. You're not looking at tardies. You're looking at who are they? What do they experience on a day-to-day basis? What happens when they wake up? Where are they when they wake up? What does it look like when they go to sleep? Is there food? Is there accountability and all those things? And having that understanding helps us inform why they show up the way they do in the classroom, why they're tardy, why they are why we're experiencing what we're experiencing with them. And so I think parents, because they may be trying their hardest and they know they're giving 100% effort, they may not be willing to acknowledge that the environment that the child is in is still not set up for them to thrive. And then maybe the parent has like, well, this is better than what I had. So they're justifying. He's like, well, when I grew up, it was 16 of us sleeping on a pullout couch. You know what I'm saying? So they've found reasons to justify, and they're really trying hard. And I believe the parents have the best intent for the kid. But if their lid is limited, that is the standard that the child excels to. And sometimes the parent may push them to the school and like, hey, y'all figure it out. Y'all do what y'all got to do. Now, on the flip side, sometimes the educator does not have a full understanding of child development and human development. They're content experts. They may have taken classes about child development and how to teach elementary school and middle school and the pedagogy and all those different things. But they're just really good at math. They just happen to take some stuff versus they came in with the understanding of human interaction and they just happen to be able to teach math. And I feel like that is the difference with the student success. So in short, when we have our mentors, is build a relationship with them. Like, we ain't talking about grades. We're trying to address everything that doesn't show up on a stat sheet. I want you to come back to me and say, Ishmael, I went with my mentee and he didn't cuss nobody out today. He didn't fall asleep in class. You know what I'm saying? He didn't roast the teacher for their shoe. Like, just small things, because if you point that out in for the child, the child's like, oh, shoot, I am making progress. You know what I mean? That creates momentum. So, okay, now that you ain't cussing the teacher out, right? Now you're not roasting your friends or gambling in the back of the class or whatever it is that you got going. What does it look like for you to have only two missing assignments? Let's start there. We're not even working about getting an A in the class. Let's just reduce our missing assignments and we make incremental progress. And when I see those things, that's our stat sheet. That's how we look at those things. We talk to the kids, get their narrative about their experiences. How do they see themselves now compared to when they first started the program? And then my goal is to convince the school or whoever we're partnering with, this is what we need to be looking at. Yes, academics is important for a number of different reasons, but if we're not addressing their self-esteem and how they view themselves, they're going to end up dropping out before they even get to college.
We live in an economy where you have to work pretty much sun up to sundown to put food on the table. And if you are a single parent, if you got multiple kids, it becomes that much harder. Yeah. And I just wonder, I don't have children, but I just wonder if when you get home, how much you actually have left to properly parent a child.
Sure.
Do you work with the parents on that?
So we do. And we're doing more to continue to grow this effort. So we call it a triple layer bean dip, where we are working with the kids after school, we're working with them in the school, so they're getting pulled out of their class, and then we're providing monthly training supports for the parent on the topics that we're teaching the child on, or providing resources and tools that helps the parent show up better for the child. Now, a lot of parents don't wanna be told how to parent, like, you don't know me, you don't know my child, and all the other stuff. So we've worked with Kiana Shaw, a phenomenal parent coach and facilitator, and Dr. Adriana Trent, who's a psychologist, two Black women, and they've created these workshop series that we invite them parents to virtually. So you could be on your commute from LA back home, you could log on while you're cooking dinner, whatever it is, and just listen, or you could be sit down and be engaged. The challenges is the accessibility, because maybe they can't because of the time zone, so we can try to record it and send it out. So we're trying to be more intentional on how do we continue to develop this model to get the information and content to the parent, But that is what we're currently doing on an ongoing basis to make sure that. And then if they wanted to, if parents seek additional questions and support, we refer them. Like, we have a partnership with Kiana Shaw. So let's figure out how you can continue to get some support from her. Our staff are responsible for contacting the family every week with an update. Good, bad, ugly. I just want to say hi because I want you to know who I am because I'm working with your kid all day. Because we want to create a connection between them and the school so that if Project Optimism is there, they're used to talking to somebody that represents the school. And then hopefully that can be maintained beyond our partnership. Unfortunately, right. A lot of parents start to pull back by fifth grade.
So why is that?
I think there's an assumption of the child is ready for that independence. Mm. So it's like kindergarten, I'm there, I'm walking the kid to the door, I'm giving them a hug and kiss. First grade, it's like, all right, you know, I'm gonna drop you off at the curb, but I'm gonna still go to parent-teacher conference. By fifth grade, it's like, all right, you about to go to middle school. You're a big boy, you're a big girl now. You gotta kind of figure this out. And I don't think that's healthy or responsible, in my opinion. I feel like right. The parent should and needs to be there. But to what we were saying earlier, if mom got a whole bunch of stuff going on, dad, grandma is in a lot of cases, a lot of times grandmas are taking care of these children. They can't. So they're looking for the earliest exit strategy so they can kind of get back to work in their graveyard shift or whatever it is to make sure that they're sustaining the family. And it's just a tough thing to balance for them.
Do you work directly with schools, or if somebody's listening to this and they say, you know what, I'm by myself, or maybe I'm having this co-parenting issue, I could really use your help. How can they get involved with Project Optimism?
Yeah. So at this present moment, we do work solely with the school sites. We've had some really intentional conversations with ABC Unified, which is in Cerritos, and Long Beach Unified, which is in Long Beach. We're also based in Sacramento, so a number of districts out there. And so our goal is to provide our services at all the schools at some point. But we're also in the process of exploring a community-based model where a child can enroll and come in on the Saturdays, regardless of what school they're enrolled in, to receive the support services to kind of address that accessibility gap.
So if someone's listening and they can't get immediately to you, what's one piece of advice? What's one thing that you would encourage them to do in the community to help prevent their child from going down the wrong path until they can get into Project Optimism? Would it be going to church, sports, music? What would you suggest?
I think empowering the child. I think children know the answer a lot of times. Just listening to them and having a conversation. So maybe the student or the son or daughter does something that they're not supposed to do. If you were a parent, how would you handle yourself? Like, what feedback would you give them? What would you provide them? And the child may have a level of bias in there because they're like, okay, if I say something, they might actually try to implement it. But I believe a lot of our children actually have the ideas and solutions because when we conduct listening sessions and focus groups, they'll tell you about rules that need to be changed at the school that's going to be more equitable. They already have this understanding. Sometimes they just don't have the words. And so if you kind of help, you know, guide them, they'll really tell you everything.
Thank you again to Ishmael Pruitt of Project Optimism. I'm going to put the link to his website in the description below. Again, if you have a child in Long Beach Unified School District and you think your child needs some extra help, you're definitely going to want to check in with him. If you have a child that's not in Long Beach Unified School District, please tap in with him as well because he is very dialed in to things that can help our young people. So he's probably going to have some resources or a name for you that can help you on your journey. Don't forget to follow me on all things social media at Jackie Ray TV. Follow me on my website at Jackie Ray TV. You can donate to me personally there if you want to donate to my independent journalism. Make sure you follow the Watchdog. Support us as we continue to try to build for you. And with that, I do want to say one thing before I get out of here. I know I've talked a lot about this journey that we've had with the Long Beach Post, specifically how Melissa Evans and Jeremiah Dobrook intentionally tried to silence my voice, especially when it came to the Black community. Y'all probably saw a whole bunch of articles from me regarding the homeless population, which I've covered very extensively. No problem getting that out. But any time I tried to cover something with the Black community, it was like, shh, shh, shh. Remember that from Candyman? Don't. They just didn't let me do that. And while I am still a little perturbed by that, I still have to take responsibility. I've had my own platform for a long time. And the reason why I built my own platform was because I refuse to let anyone silence me, especially when it comes to speaking out about my community. And I failed miserably at that. So I owe you guys an apology. I shall not fail you again. So if you live in Long Beach and there's a story that you think needs some attention, please email me at JackieRayMedia@gmail.com. Again, it's JackieRayMedia@gmail.com. I am more than happy to cover it. It might take me a little longer now because your girl is back to work and freelance. It's a lot, but you do what you got to do, right? But this is still my passion. I'm going to get to every single story that I can. I definitely applaud those of you who stood before city council last week and really told Suli Saro, hey, we're tired of you overlooking us. Y'all could have changed that in the last election, but you know, that's not the point. The point is you got out there and you voiced your concerns. I'm definitely going to be following up on that. So if you're one of the people, I've reached out to a few of you, but if you spoke at city council, please email me at JackieRayMedia@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you so we can continue to apply this pressure together, because remember, we are all we got and we are all we need. And don't forget, life is short, so make it good. We'll see you next time.